You are listening to the Zen Nova Scotia podcast with talks by Cone Franz. These talks are made possible in part by generous donations from our listeners. To find out how to support and take part in our community, visit zennovascotia.com.
Every fourth Tuesday, and for anyone who's doing this ceremony at home, we read this lineage. And on either side of the lineage, there's this text that's maybe kind of weird. And maybe people wonder, what is this? Where does this come from? It starts with, actualizing Buddha ancestors means to uphold and see them in veneration. It is not limited to Buddhas of the past, present, and future, but it is going beyond Buddhas who are going beyond themselves. It is taking up those who have maintained the face and eye of Buddha ancestors, formally bowing and encountering them. They have manifested the power of the Buddha ancestors, dwelt in it, and actualized it in the body. And then we read this lineage, and then there's this bit at the end, which we'll talk about. I think what we take away from this usually is the list. But this is actually an entire chapter from Dogen's Shobo Genzo. It's the shortest chapter, I think, called Shobo Genzo Busso. Busso means Buddha ancestors. It's just this paragraph. And then he lists the entire lineage up to his present, which obviously doesn't go quite as far as we go. And then there's this little bit at the end, and that's it. He's talking about transmission. He's talking about this experience of entering into his teacher's lineage. And we chant this in first person as if it's us. I wanted to talk about that a little bit. I think that, I mentioned last week that I sometimes assign this ceremony almost as homework. You know, if people say that they really want to dive in deeper, I'll say, do this. And I'm very aware as I do that, that if I were to take the lineage part out, if I just said, you know what? Every day, do the repentance verse, do refuge, say your vows. It's very quick. That's a feel-good experience, right? It's very clear. It's very first person. You're saying, I take responsibility. I know what my commitment is. I know what I'm going to do. It's very empowering. I like it that way. And when we add this extra element, or what feels like an extra element of chanting the lineage, that for some of us, that brings a lot. Suddenly it's a very different ceremony. It's not just this empowering statement about where we are in the practice. It's something else, something that feels complex. So I want to talk a little bit about the text, and I also want to talk about how we relate to this whole experience of chanting the lineage and bowing. Actualizing Buddha ancestors. So right there, that's interesting, right? You're actualizing Buddha ancestors. You're not it's not remembering them. It's not listing them. It's not honoring them. It's manifesting them. Actualizing Buddha ancestors means to uphold and see them in veneration. It is not limited to Buddhas of the past, present, and future. This is very Dogen-esque. He's listed the three times. And then he says, it's not just that. He doesn't want us to get stuck anywhere. It is not limited to Buddhas of the past, present, and future, but it is going beyond Buddhas who are going beyond themselves. So how do we understand this? If it's not limited to Buddhas of past, present, and future, then in a sense he's saying, it's not about these people. It's not about the history. It's not about a straight line. that starts 2,500 years ago and continues to today, and maybe we imagine that it keeps going beyond us in the fourth dimension in some linear way. It's about Buddha meeting Buddha. It's transcendence, going beyond, right? It's us going beyond Buddhas. What does it mean to go beyond Buddhas? Well, there's the obvious thing, which is that if the whole thing works, then Mahakashapa was supposed to surpass the Buddha, and Ananda was supposed to surpass Mahakashapa. It's not supposed to be a process of diminishing returns. It's actually supposed to be people going beyond their own teachers. We forget that. But it's also going beyond our idea of Buddha. It's seeing past the parts that seem limited. It is taking up those who have maintained the face and eye of Buddha ancestors, formally bowing and encountering them. The face refers generally to, you know, we have this koan about what was your original face before you were born, right? It has to do with your true nature, your base nature, and the eye has to do with a clear seeing, right? With the right view. So you're meeting them there. It's taking up those who have maintained the face and eye of Buddha ancestors, who have carried this through, formally bowing and encountering them. And here I've mentioned this before, this idea that Dogen sees things in terms of holochronic time, that it's three-dimensional time. Everybody's meeting everybody all the time, right? One of his lineage documents, one of our lineage documents, is called a shisho, and it's a circle where all the names radiate out like the rays of the sun, so that each person in that lineage is immediately facing every other person in that lineage. And what Dogen would say is that it's all happening simultaneously. It's not just that you meet your teacher. It's that when you stand in that lineage, you meet all of them. And they meet you. It's a total encounter. This is what Dogen says. You don't have to believe it. They have manifested the power of the Buddha ancestors. So already you're being told to manifest the power of the Buddha ancestors. And he's saying the Buddha ancestors are the people who manifested the power of the Buddha ancestors. You're just taking up the same task. They have dwelt in it. And they have actualized it in the body. They internalized it. And then these names. And it starts out, if you know something about these names, and they're fun to read up on, you know, it's, at first they have the name and then Butsu. Butsu means Buddha. So these are the seven Buddhas before Buddha, we say. And then there's Shakyamuni Buddha. And then after that, we lose the Butsu, and they're just Daiyosho, which means they're a high priest. I think as long as we have Butsu in there, it's easy for us to kind of project onto them that A, maybe these are kind of supernatural beings, and B, how can I criticize them? They're probably fine, you know. But then, and then we get into Mahakashapa and Ananda, and we know all these stories about them if we like to read stories about the Buddha, and we know they were regular people, but we also know they were there on the scene, and they seem pretty extraordinary. But then the names start getting a little less known to us, and we start to, at least if you're like me, they start to feel more ordinary. You know, and someone pops up every once in a while, like Bodhidharma. We get to Bodhi Daruma Daiyosho, and we say, Bodhidharma, he was kind of special. I'll, you know. Okay, now we're back on track, you know. But there are all these people in the middle who, I don't know, you know. Maybe they weren't that interesting. Maybe I don't know what they did, And if you're a person living in 2019, I think it's easy to become uncomfortable then with the idea of upholding someone in veneration. We kind of know too much. We're past the age of heroes, right? And in fact, we live in a culture that kind of actively tries to tear the idea of a hero down, right? If someone is being upheld in veneration culturally, you know that there are 1,000 people trying to find the thing that will put an end to that. They're looking. They're using everything at their disposal. And because we're human, they will find it. Right? So that the politician who seemed like the one who would save us, well, we find out that thing that they said back in 1979. And that's unacceptable. That's not okay. And it's not just that they become human to us, it's that they become no longer usable. And we move on to the next. Here we're being asked to do something that is counterintuitive, that goes against what we know about people, in a sense. What I want to say to that, because I have exactly those feelings, I'm talking about myself here. I know, like, in the lineage I chant, which goes much further than this, it goes to my teacher. The only person on that lineage that I know is my teacher. I never met my teacher's teacher. And I know that my teacher is a very ordinary man. And he smokes a lot. And he likes to play on his phone, you know, and yeah, he likes to do priest stuff, but he'd really rather be hiking. He's a very solitary guy in that way. He's not playing the role that someone might hope he would play if he's going to show up on that list. I can only assume that the same thing is true of his teacher and his teacher's teacher. You know, there's this story, I've mentioned this before, I love this image so much, that we have this image in Zen, and I assume in other traditions as well, it comes from China, of this dragon that holds a black pearl, right? And the black pearl is held beneath the dragon's chin, and that black pearl is the pearl of enlightenment. And the idea is that when we take up this practice, that we kind of wrestle with the dragon, we're trying to get that pearl for ourselves. And the dragon is charged with guarding it and keeping it and will only relinquish it to someone who really, really fights for it. Right? This comes out of kind of a different story of Zen where we're really on fire, right? It's a little bit aggressive. But I love this image that the dragon is holding onto that pearl as tightly as she can, but also really is hoping that you'll get it, right? That's really beautiful. The dragon is rooting for you. This, in some ways, is a list of dragons that pass something on to the next dragon and pass something on to the next dragon. That's a beautiful part, but we can also know when we look back at this list, because we know something about humanity, again, that some of these people, they wouldn't want you to have the pearl. Maybe because you're a woman. Maybe because you're not from India, or because you're not from China, or because you're not from Japan. Right? Because all of those biases we can expect to appear in anyone. So even as you're upholding these people in veneration, maybe they wouldn't have been so impressed with you because they wouldn't have been able to see you as you are. They might not have been able to see past their own limitations. Knowing that becomes our own limitation. But what is asked of us here, and I'll get, let's get to the end part, because this is where it comes. It says, with a formal bow, I completed receiving these Buddha ancestors. This can only occur between a Buddha and a Buddha. It's such a good line. When we talked a few months or weeks ago about Yuibutsu Yobutsu, Dogen's text called Only Buddha and Buddha, there's this great line at the end about how birds can see the traces of other birds in the sky, and that Buddhas can see the traces of other Buddhas. The idea being that part of what it means to be a Buddha is to recognize a Buddha. In order to have this encounter with these other Buddhas, you must be able to see them as Buddhas. And in order to see them as Buddhas, you must in fact be one, by definition. That, in many ways, is the task. It's to see others beyond their limitations and beyond your limitations. To see past the conditioning, to see past the history, to see past the biases, yours and theirs, to Buddha. What's impressive about this encounter is not the people on the list. It's this act of choosing to see the people on the list in this way. Because if we're honest, these are the easy ones. They already have a myth around them. And we know that one way or another, whether they did it skillfully or clumsily, somehow they handed something off to someone, who then handed it off to someone else, who somehow got it to you. So it's not that hard. And so you practice with them, because there are other people for whom it's much harder. There are other people in your life to whom you can't so easily bow as if you're bowing to a Buddha, I assume. So you take it up here, in the same way that in this room we all bow to each other. You develop that muscle. Ideally, you do that every day. And in that process, you expand your ability to see. You expand your ability to hold someone in a particular kind of way. We've talked many times that the goal here is not to be a Buddha for whatever your idea is of the Buddha. The idea is to be the Bodhi tree under which someone else can sit and be totally free with what eyes do you look at someone so that they are unlimited in that moment? What space do you create around someone that creates no new limitations, that reinforces no old limitations, but lets them move as Buddha? That's the challenge. That's the play here. We should be very honest about how human the people on this list are, because they're every bit as human as any human being you've ever met. And then having done that, we should take this up as a kind of play. as a new way of making space for someone else. I find it very hard. I'll stop there.
For more information about Zen, our practice, and how you can support and take part in our community, please visit zennovascotia.com.